with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop renewal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Everybody got your duct tape? Everybody got your hockey puck? Yeah? Good. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That is where you will find our chat room. Like I said before, I'll figure out a way to get back to posting a bunch of news stories. The functionality that made that such a pleasant task disappeared for want of venture capital funding. But I'll figure out a way. Honest to God, I will. This is The Horn. Yeah, I said that. And the web, you are, yeah, did that too. Anyway, jump on into the chat room. You'll find the chat room at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Chat room's free, easy to access, and an absolute delight among folks who enjoy making it an entire multimedia experience. Yeah, folks wandering in already. Lottie is there moderating. Jan and Devin are in the room. And in short order, I imagine we will see Tim from L.A. and God knows who all else. Because, well, we're beginning a brand new week, and we know what that means, don't we? Yeah, we've had a whole weekend to gather up a bumper crop of morans because it's Moran Monday on the Horn. Oh, you know it. I want to start the program. Get things started with a couple of words of thanks. In particular, thanks going out to our buddy Tom in California for getting it started, as well as to the subscription that came in. So that means we are at 35. Yeah, we've only got $115 in fundraising to go this evening. Isn't that nice? Thank you very much. Thank you very kindly. And hopefully that means we'll get there quicker rather than later. We try to raise $150 every evening just to keep this all going. And that's, well, you go find me another radio network operating on $150 a day, doing 3 hours of programming 5 days a week. There aren't many. Especially not many that have been operating for, say, 10 years that way. So, yeah, hit the PayPal button or the traditional mail address. Either one works fine. Thanks very much for keeping all of this going. This is listener-supported, listener-driven, conversation-oriented. That's why we call it conversation radio. Yeah. Of course, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I think I'm supposed to say that somewhere along the way. Yeah. Goodness me. It's the beginning of the week, and the beginning of the week means something around here. Oh, yes. Yes, it most assuredly does. That's right.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, step right up. Right this way. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. You will not believe your ears. Behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, Morans of all types, all sizes, all attitudes and persuasions. Right-wing Morans, Republican Morans, Evangelical Morans, Gundamentalist Morans, Morans oh plenty. John Birch Society Morans, Libertarian Morans, Teabagging Morans, Repiglicans of all shapes and sizes, all stripes, every kind of Moran represented here in the Moran Monday tent. That's right. You can't tell the morons without a program, and this is the program that tells the morons. You just can't tell them much. Absolutely. People with bags, purses, small children are advised to keep them well in hand in the Moran Monday tent because the morons can, in fact, be grabby. And maybe a little bit more than grabby, depending on how one defines the term. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morons. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And we've been stacking them up all weekend like espresso cups outside a sidewalk cafe in some European capital. Paris, I'm talking to you. Oh, wouldn't that be nice? But no, we have to be back here at the fairgrounds, just off the midway, running the Moran Monday tent. Because as it probably actually translates in that book, the morons ye have always with ye. Oh, brother, where to start? I got an early start when I found out about a phenomenon that I had never heard of before called Rollin' Co. R-O-L-L-I-N apostrophe C-O-A-L. Rollin' Co. It actually has nothing to do with Co., which was having a festival this weekend. No, it has nothing to do with coal itself. It has to do with diesel fumes, which is nasty enough. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Yeah. It seems that the morons, many of whom are offended at the idea of people being able to breathe clean air, none of whom know any of the science whatsoever about ultrafine particulate matter, or have read any of the scientific reports that have been generated the world over on such things. My goodness gracious. They modify this apply, because I haven't seen anything about this being done to, say, a TDI Volkswagen Jetta or anything. No, apparently this phenomenon applies to big old manly testosterone-infused diesel pick-em-up truck engines. You know, there we were just last Friday talking during Friday on the Front Porch about what we hope will someday be a revolution in electric automobiles. And I suggested it would be a beautiful day when we could get to the point where there are electric pick-em-up trucks, because it would change the Bubba culture. Well, that's when the goddess of irony tweaked my little nose. Just to remind me, I suppose, that it's going to take a lot of work to change that there Bubba culture. Oh, God, yes. Because it was the very next day that I found out about Rollin' Co. In which, and I kid you not, Bubba's, oh, why are we calling them Bubba's? Dimwits will spend thousands of dollars to modify their diesel pickup trucks so as to make them nastier, to make them more polluting, to make them more toxic. You've seen the vertical exhaust stacks, say, on a semi tractor trailer. Because the exhaust has to go somewhere, and it can't, and they just can't run, you know, muffler pipes that extend the entire length of the trailer part, because that thing unhitches, and, well, you know. So they go straight up. And when there is a big load on the engine, it can spit out some pretty
significant fumes, exhaust, emissions, right? Okay, but it's not intentional. Well, with these bubbas, with these dimwits, see, I did it again. With these dimwits, it is intentional. They think it's manly and sexy, and they spend thousands of dollars having their pickup trucks modified and the engines modified so that they will have exhaust stacks like a big old semi-tractor trailer, or maybe just a tractor. And they've got it set up so that at a second's demand, they can emit great belching black clouds of filth onto the people that are downwind of them or behind them. One photograph of a Roland Coe pickup truck shows a decal on the back glass pointing to either exhaust stack with the words Prius repellent on it. Because you see them Priuses is sissy cars for sissy men and sissy people who think that somehow or another this planet, it wasn't made to just accept all the filth that the coal rollers could pump into the air. So I went around and I read a little bit, and it seems to be, sadly, sorry, it seems to be a phenomenon that's really gotten its legs under it in Florida, Stan. A lot of Florida coal rollers. And then I left the house. Yep. And maybe this is a cognition issue. Only once you've been made aware of something do you begin to pay attention to it. But on Saturday and Sunday both, I saw modified diesel pickup trucks here in West Virginia. I'm not the least bit surprised. That are designed to pump filth into the air that human beings have to breathe. And diesel, in particular, is a notorious creator of ultrafine particles, which, as a listener to this program, you know, are the deadliest of all particulate matter because they're so tiny that there's nothing in the human body that can even slow them down. I wouldn't feel so bad about it if the co-rollers were, had tubes to pump it back into their own vehicles. They want to make this shit, let them breathe it. But no, they send it downwind into cars where children are riding, or where people with respiratory disorders are traveling. And implicit in all of this is the idea that pollution is funny. And it's a liberal plot to keep them from being able to row coal. Roland Coal, R-O-L-L-I-N-C-O-A-L. Jackasses. And so, there we... yesterday, I had a lovely afternoon, went down into the Coal River Valley, spent some time with my ache colleague, Bo and his extended family. It was a lovely, lovely afternoon. And so there we were, coming home. And the road down into the Coal River Valley is a winding and somewhat tortuous one. And it is driven by people who treat that road like it's straight. And so I generally do the speed limit, but I also, I'm old enough that I've passed my days of needing to make automobiles make all the speed they'll make just to prove something to myself. I'm happy to get from point A to point B, and well, it turned out that we were coming up out of the Coal River Valley with a rapidly leaking tire because I picked up a nail or a piece of glass or something trying to get it fixed now. Jeez. But anyway. Suddenly, we hear, and lo and behold, one of these vehicles that's modified to emit poison And you just know this puke was a mountaintop removal worker. You just know. Okay, I don't know. I suspect. I surmise. I believe. It had to be. Because there's a mindset that goes with this. Of deliberately pumping poison into the air. Regardless, and arguably with malice aforethought, to anyone who has to breathe it. And so there it was. I'd had my first experience within 24 hours of reading about it, of Roland Coe. Come on, Elon Musk. Bring us that electric pickup truck. Because I don't care how cool your coal roller is, when there's an electric pickup truck out there, and without a sound in the world, you just, whew. And before he knows it, the Roland Coe diesel pickup truck has just had its doors blown off by something that doesn't make any noise at all and that he never heard and completely snuck up on him. And has more torque than his diesel engine does. Sheesh. Michael with an email. Hey, Bob, have the Horn family check out Google Images to see what kind of assholes these guys are. News to me. I'll probably see them here soon. Is there a part of the country where this would not be tolerated? I hope so. Technically, I think there are even EPA regulations that deal with this sort of thing. California members of the Horn Family Commune Congregation. Let's say Billy Joe Bob wants to drive across country with his Roland Coe diesel pick-em-up truck. And he arrives in sunny California, and let's say he's sitting at an intersection and wants to show some aspect of manliness because he's lacking so much of it in his own department. And he engages his system and belches out a few cubic meters of black, sooty smoke. It's almost like the trucks speak in tongues, isn't it? Would some member of the local constabulary in California pull such a numbnuts over? Could I see your insurance and your registration, like, please, you know? What do you think you're doing to our air, dude? I don't know. Devin has apparently not read the article. Devin observing, Bob, they don't do it for the smoke. The easiest way to increase the power of a diesel is to increase the fuel flow. More smoke is the side effect, so it's hot rodding. No, Devin, no. Read the article. They're not doing it for the power. They are doing it for the effect. That's why the one has the decal on it, pointing to his stacks that didn't have to be there in the first place, that he has paid thousands of dollars to do the modifications on, so it will belch black smoke. And that's why the photograph of the truck has the decal that says, what? Yeah. Prius. Oh, what was it? I got to scroll all the way down to it again. Yeah, I'll get there in a minute. No, I understand the need for power. I understand that completely. These are deliberately modified vehicles that are designed to be more polluting because people want the pollution. It's not about the power. It's about the pollution. And that's, I mean, that, because otherwise it would be Roland Diesel or Roland Paraffin, if you want to get all Euro about it. But they call it Roland Coal. Yeah, Alan the Trucker pointing out small trucks make more noise than tractor trailers. Precisely. This is a direct evidence of anti-intellectualism, although I somehow can't fathom the idea that not poisoning somebody is a function of intellectual pursuit. This is in praise of the stupid. And it absolutely boggles my mind. But in a country that treats something as serious as climate change as if it was some sort of elite New England parlor game, well, I guess we're just going to have to agree to disagree, Devin, because these people are not doing it for the power. They are doing it specifically to make it belch smoke. I wish I was joking. And it is a thing. And for some reason or another, my Facebook page is not cooperating, so let's do it this way. Because I posted it over on my Facebook page. By the way, Sparky has posted some Roland Coal drag racing crazy fast pickups. Yada, yeah. But when you combine your Roland Co. with a decal like the one displayed, there's more in play than simply trying to obtain more power for one's vehicle. And besides, what Sparky posted, those are out on the drag strip. This is not that. These are cars that run up and down ordinary American winding. In this place, winding highways. Almost there. God, my Facebook page is busy. There it is. Yeah, if you're just after more power, put more power on the back of your pickup truck, not Prius repellent. There it is. Yeah, these idiots are proud of their smoke. You in the Americans Against the Tea Party article that I ran across about this, John Prager quotes Robbie, a 25-year-old mechanic, who said, "Your truck is not just something to get you to point from point A to point B. It's who you are." John Prager also noting that those who subscribe to this subculture spend between $1,000 and $5,000 modifying their trucks, adding smokestacks and switches to trick the engine into thinking it needs more fuel, specifically to make the smoke, not to make the power. Sure, this is just a little bitty, inconsequential piece of stupid fluff. It's not earth-shattering or monumental, like whether or not sending 300 soldiers to Iraq constitutes getting sucked back into the quagmire. Because, after all, Dick Cheney showed up with his fangs tucked away on one of those Sunday babblehead fests to call Barack Obama a sissy man, so as to hopefully taunt Barack Obama into sending, you know, lots of sons and daughters of lots and mothers and fathers, and lots of mothers and fathers even of little bitty sons and daughters, over to get chewed to pieces in the Iraqi meat grinder. Yeah. By the way, Alan the Trucker noting, subject line, lung cancer and truck driving. One of the times when my mother was in the hospital, she had a man in the room next to her who never smoked, yet he drove a tractor trailer all his life and wound up with lung cancer. Welcome to ultra-fine particulate matter. Robert in Australia, sort of typing agog, if you will. So, Bob, no emission standards in the U.S. then, I take it? You'd never get such vehicles on the road in this country. Speaking of vehicles, Ford is pulling out of Australia. And I use that expression deliberately. The cost of labor or production or both is too high. A lot of jobs have been lost. They'll be gone by July 2017. I waited for someone in government to suggest that we start producing electric cars using the open source plans supplied by Tesla. Not a word. They probably don't know. I'll have to write and suggest it. Hey, do that. Do that, Robert. Be an activist. Because you can be an activist just by writing a letter with a good idea in it. Following up on it. Creating conversation around it. An answer to our California question coming from Tim from L.A. Bob, more likely than not, if your car is registered and you start to emit smoke, you would get a fix-it ticket, get your vehicle repaired, pass at a test-only center, and would have to go to the California Highway Patrol station to get it signed off. On the other hand, if you can produce diesel for display and violate, and several links here, you may therefore possibly end up in prison. You will be fined and possibly have your vehicle impounded. So I'm guessing the great American Rolling Coal, Rolling Thunder Review won't be being held in L.A. Tim notes one last thing. When it comes to pollution, we don't like stupid people. And see, that's the thing. What is referred to sneeringly in Jesus land as environmentalism is understood at almost a universal level in a place like California or Oregon or Washington. Because it's understood to be something that is everybody's problem and something that impacts everybody. So consequently, more than 50% of all the monies that are donated to environmental organizations are donated from California. How about that? That doesn't say something bad about South California. It says something very, very good. It means that people understand. It also means there's been a success. There's been success to a large extent in changing the culture. Now, I've not got my rose-colored glasses on. I know there are right-wing gas bags, ass hats, and I mean, hell, Michael the Savage Wiener lives in California. More on him in a moment. Get it? Moron. See? And you have politicians to reflect that. We in other parts of the country, to wit Jesus land, we don't have that advantage. I've got a news story here that our buddy Asa in Vancouver passed along to me from a website called ocanada.com, o.canada.com. Clever, eh? Which is apparently, who knew that Canada would care about coal in West Virginia? Well, there's a photo of a little tiny coal princess riding past the Boone County Courthouse in Madison, West Virginia, which is absolutely nothing like Madison, Wisconsin, I might add. It is altogether a much less pleasant Madison. And the Canadian press, Alexander Panetta, writes, elsewhere it's being vilified, regulated, and undercut by competition. Here, coal gets a parade. Dateline, Madison, West Virginia. A hilly West Virginia county that prides itself as the cradle of American coal concluded 5 days of festivities last week with a sirens wailing, lights blazing demonstration of love for an embattled industry. How about love for a poisonous piece of compressed and rotted vegetable matter? Nah, too many words. Copy editor won't approve. I don't know if you file this under human interest or what, but... Oh, let's see. Wait. I'm getting ahead of myself. At this coal festival down in Madison, both candidates for the Senate of the United States, the seat being vacated by John D. Rockefeller IV, where the human health of people living beneath mountaintop removal sites is concerned, may go down in history as John D. Rocky Failure. The two candidates running for his seat, Natalie Tennant, the Democrat, and Shelley Moore Capito, who is presently the 2nd District Congress critter for West Virginia, They're vying for that seat, and it looks like Natalie is just going to get stomped. And that's kind of amazing, really, because they are both out there pressing the flesh, shaking the babies, kissing the hands, and swearing undying devotion to the coal industry, telling everyone who will listen how much they love coal. So that means that I, as someone with a functioning brain who understands coal's history, coal's present, and the fact that coal does not have a future, especially in Central Appalachia, I get nobody to vote for in November. Because I can choose the coalocrat or the coalican. Because we don't have anybody to stand up for people who breathe air and drink water. It's all coal all the time. Wonder if they had any rolling coal pickup trucks there in the parade at the coal festival in Madison. What
do you do when the system itself disenfranchises you? I'm not talking, I mean, you know, I glow in the dark with white male privilege. Nobody's going to slow me down on the way to the polls. I'm more than welcome to go to the polls and vote for a Democrat who supports poisoning people living at the foot of mountaintop removal operations, or I can equally as zealously vote for a Republican who supports poisoning innocent people who live at the foot of mountaintop removal operations. I can vote for either one. Man, I am free. I am up to my eyebrows in freedom here. I'm just not quite free enough to vote for someone who follows science, to vote for someone who knows that global climate change is anthropogenic and real, to vote for someone who understands that the coal industry is going to do to this area, this region, what it's always done, and that this time they're leaving for good, and when they leave, we are effed because we are in no wise ready for it. That's what I got to deal with. That's the freedom that I'm lacking. Because it is impossible to stand up before a group of West Virginia voters and say, listen, we got to have a serious conversation about our future. And the conversation that we have to have about our future does not include coal. Not because coal is good or bad, but because it's going to be gone. We're out. We're running out. We're done. And all the mountaintop removal people and all the friends of coal yell, brugga, 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 brugga. As if you just stepped to the microphone and said, oh, folks, there ain't no God. Booga, 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 booga. This O Canada story from the Canadian Press repeats some of the more frequently discussed tropes that appear in this kind of reporting. Area miners face new challenges now. A double whammy from federal climate change regulations and the growing competition from cheap, abundant natural gas. Bullshit! Well, not on the cheap, abundant natural gas part. But this Appalachian coal is being sent to Russia and China and India, to Germany and the Netherlands. Japan is looking at trying to get hold of more coal to replace the nuclear reactors that didn't turn out to work quite so well at Fukushima. And that's a great idea. It's just a lovely idea because you'll have all the coal filth coming from the Chinese coal-burning operations that's already blowing across Japan, and Japan can make some more of its own, and then Japan can start walking around in, you know, those sperm suits. Just to keep from being exposed to this filth. Climate change regulations, my ass. Please, does nobody even read this stuff? The new EPA regs are all about how you can. They're all about how the states get to tailor everything to their own needs and make it work individually because states' rights. A little further in the article, the author says, the overall picture for coal isn't actually that dire. U.S. production is currently projected to dip only slightly, bolstered by increased demand from abroad. But this ancestral industry hub is taking a disproportionate hit. Why is that? Because there ain't as much anymore. Jeez.
and then this. I mentioned how I don't have anybody to vote for in the Senate race. That might explain why the Democratic candidate for the Senate last weekend used the loudest and most colorful conceivable tactic to distance herself from a carbon-regulating, gun-control-pushing president. Gun-control-pushing president. Asa, is this the right-wing press up there? She marched down Main Street carrying a rifle Saturday during the parade dedicated to coal. She fired it into the air twice, and just in case anybody had failed to notice the eardrum rattling booms and the puffs of smoke above the center of town, Natalie Tennant delivered a little play-by-play. "I'm about to fire a rifle," she said. Most polls have her down by double digits. Although I wouldn't get within 100, well, I'm not even 100 miles from Madison, but although I wouldn't get anywhere near this thing, it might be good for people to come from around the country and actually see this, because this is actually a pretty good description. It's pretty vivid. Both she and her Republican rival were at the festival. The parties had stands set up near the Ferris wheel and merry-go-rounds. There were two merry-go-rounds? Who knew? They were competing for converts with a nearby stall that offered spiritual salvation, illustrated by flames undulating from the bowels of hell. The next two stalls were selling purses and baseball caps. As for more terrestrial prophecies about excruciating heat, the residents have heard the warnings, and several did express concern about climate change. Because we know. We just live in this Stalinist place where you can't talk out loud very much about knowing you know. You know? Joy Underwood, the festival president and a retired school principal, said, "They talk about the global warming, but I don't believe coal's the only culprit. This is a retired school principal!" Ma'am, nobody said coal is the only culprit. It is, however, the worst culprit. We can understand it as the worst culprit if we only understand it from the fact that we were burning coal before we were burning oil, that we were burning coal before we were burning gas. But it's also the worst culprit in terms of the amount of carbon emitted into the atmosphere. Supreme Court took that up today, by the way. A retired school principal implies that global warming people concerned about global warming are claiming that coal is the only culprit. This is a nasty bit of logical, illogical misdirection. Ronnie Justice is a committed Democrat. Committed indeed. He said new regulations will only shift coal production to China and Australia and Mongolia. And then when asked about President Obama, Ronnie Justice, committed Democrat, said, "He don't know anything about coal mining." And then these two paragraphs. You're going to love this. Like I said, on Mondays, the duct tape and the hockey puck are not optional. Ronnie Justice defended the industry, which employed him for 37 years, as well as his dad, his three brothers, his maternal grandfather, and his dad's grandfather. He refrained from blaming it for a chemical spill this year at a coal washing facility, which cut off water to 300,000 residents, left people with rashes, and forced some to bathe in washtubs like the old ones Justice used while growing up. He credited coal mining to providing $27 an hour jobs in a region where there aren't many.
If you're not a doctor, a lawyer, or a teacher, you're not going to make that kind of money here unless you own your own business.
I wonder how many small business owners in West Virginia make $27 an hour. Not many. And then there was Ms. Cook. She was headed off. She's a miner's widow. She still supports Coe. Her husband got incinerated alive by Don Blankenship in the Upper Big Branch disaster. And she said, if we lose coal here in Boone County, we've lost our way of life. God has put this coal here in these hills for us to use. How do you break that mindset? Her husband was incinerated. How do you look at, because the grief is real, it's palpable. How do you look at her, having lost what she lost, and say to her, ma'am, you don't get to say, if we lose coal. We're going to lose coal, because coal is finite. It's almost done. That's why we're in this frenzy that we're in down here. Because the coal industry is trying to keep you in an absolute apoplectic fit, so that they can steal everything left that we've got. And then when they're gone, they won't even look back on the way out. Kelly with an answer to my question. Bob, as I've said before, there ain't no other kind of press in Canada except right wing. You think the media is bad in the U.S.? That's nothing. That's why we listen to you, buddy. Thank you, Kelly. And Tim pointing out, subject line, why I hate pollution. I used to have asthma as a kid and could not breathe, and I used to take a shitload of asthma medicine to stop the wheezing. Funny thing, when I used to go back up to the Sierra Nevada as a kid, when I used to go to church camp, my asthma vanished. Even with the lack of air, and I used to run around with my friends without worrying about having a lung attack. My parents used to fill up my prescription just before camp, but I never took one pill. Luckily, I outgrew my asthma as I grew older. Don't need the drugs, and with the stringent smog regulation in Los Angeles. From automobiles, businesses, homes, and anything that produces exhaust, the asthma problem in my parents' area decreased, and kids can play outside without worrying about a stage 2 or stage 3 smog alert. These alerts mean that no children should be outside. The last time, though, we had a smog issue was a few weeks ago after the fire in northern San Diego. The smog headed our way, and we had a stage 2 smog alert. The skies are actually blue, and as Sparky once mentioned, the dirty freeway signs, they're now a part of history. The soot's no longer covering the signs. If the coal-rolling morons come to Los Angeles, I'm going to affect a California Penal Code 837, or a citizen's arrest. I like the cleaner air, and no one, including my niece and nephew, should go through what my brother, sister, and I went through as kids. Well, you know, when you were kids, there may well have been coal still being burned for your electricity, too, Tim. California's trying to prove that you can outgrow coal. And you're actually being reasonably successful at it. It can be done. It's just that people are saying it can't be. I read a story, you know, I've mentioned the fact that there's plans to turn Northwest Alabama, a place I hold dear in my heart, into an Alberta-esque hellscape for tar sands. And lo and behold, I was reading a story about it from the group that's trying to work against tar sands in Alabama. And there was some goober standing up in front of a group saying, oh, wind and solar power is just fine, but it don't really work yet. Damn. The disease is spreading. Now, I don't know if you realize it, but we've worked a lot of more different Morans into the last 49 minutes. Sure, rolling coal, but we get to talk about climate change, and we've managed to talk about the blood-sodden Dick Cheney. See how it works? And we got a lot more Morans. We got a bunch more Morans. Asa, echoing Kelly, said, told you the Canadian press is just as filthy and right-wing as in the U.S. I believe it. I believe it, Asa. We haven't had a Michael Savage Wiener sighting on Moran Monday or generally anywhere in the program in a very long time. We got one this evening. But before we go there, this got posted to my Facebook page by, I believe, Joe. Thank you, Joe. And I was really, really, really torn as to whether to save this for Wednesday, but by then it'll be all over the place. No, this guy's a Monday Moran, too. He's one of the grabby ones that the Barker talks about at the beginning of the program. We're talking about John Balio, aged 35. I went checking around on the YouTube thingy, and I found John Balio. I found John Balio in some Russian-speaking country, apparently. Let's check in with John Balio at orphanage number 60 in apparently Russia. He's going to speak, and Olga is going to translate.
We have truly enjoyed getting to know you this week and to tell you about our friend, Jesus. Our team...
A room with a small group of orphans in it, right? To tell you about our friend, Jesus.
Our team and their friends and family have brought these gifts today.
Теперь послушайте, вот наши друзья, которые приехали сюда, молодой человек, вы видите, очень красиво. Наши наши люди, которые приехали сюда, вот их друзья, их семьи, они пожертвовали деньги на то, чтобы купить вот эту одежду и все вам, чтобы принести сюда домой.
We hope that as you receive these gifts, that you'll know that we care about you, that we will continue to pray for you, that we love you in Jesus' name. And the greatest gift of all, better than anything up here, is Jesus Christ, and that's what we've been trying to tell you about this week.
You know what? Наиболее подарок это Иисус Христос. Он намного больше даже, чем вот эти все вещи, которые мы вам привезли. Чем вот эти водки мы вам привезли. Я не знаю, что вы там
слышите.
Я хочу, чтобы вы знали, что каждый из вас очень важен для Бога.
And you are loved, and we will continue to pray for you.
Thank you for having us. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. So that's John Balio, who wants people to know how much... little Russian orphan children to know how much Jesus loves them. Whoops. I mean, like, big. Oops. John Balio has... been the morning drive guy at WCSG Radio, which is a Christian radio station, because John Dalio is a big old Christian. And he was up in Gaylord, Michigan, or near Gaylord, Michigan. You know, the goddess of irony has just been tweaking my little nose all weekend. Where he was taken down by law enforcement at the Big Ticket Christian Music Festival. The charge? First degree criminal sexual conduct, a felony. According to law enforcement authorities, John Dalio paid someone else to arrange for him to have sexual encounters with children. According to Wonkette, federal and state agents say 41-year-old Ronald Lee Moser of Battle Creek, Michigan, ran a website offering paying customers sex with underage boys. Earlier this month, when police raided Moser's home, they say they found him with a 12-year-old boy and confiscated child pornography. That also is when authorities say they discovered John Dalio, Christian, broadcaster, was a client of Moser's. Yeah. Jesus. And he's over there with all those little Russian orphans who are largely defenseless in a very, very corrupt place that probably for the right amount of money, well, yeah. I checked in with 24-Hour News 8. WoodTV.com. And here's what they reported.
Lemke started by saying that the state...
Lemke being the general manager of WCSG. Hold tight. No, really. Double-check that hockey puck, would you?
...ended its affiliation with John Dalio this past Saturday after Dalio was arrested for paying to have sex with children. He went on to say that no one is immune to falling into the darkness of sin, but...
Huh? He went on to say that no one is immune to falling into the darkness of sin. I don't think this was a falling. I think this was a hanging out in the darkness of sin. Because paying someone to pimp you a child with whom to have sex isn't something you just do one day. I feel like a real criminal today. What am I going to do? Well, I could knock over the bank. Nah, they might shoot me. Tell you what, I think I'll become a child sexual rapist. Uh-oh, am I falling into the darkness of sin? Yeah, falling into the darkness of sin. Luckily, Jesus will forgive him for having sex with little children, but it seems as though the authorities in Michigan may not be so inclined.
There is hope. Dalio, the former morning radio host, was arrested Friday while attending a Christian music festival in Gaylord. Authorities raided his Caledonia home looking for evidence after that arrest. Police say Dalio paid Ronald Moser of Battle Creek to arrange sexual encounters with children. The station GM urged its listeners to pray.
Over the next few weeks, we request you pray in earnest for John, his family, our team here at WCS.
Hey, Chris Lemke, WCSG General Manager, when you're putting out that list of who ought to be prayed for, do you think you could put the children that John Dalio screwed at the top of the list? No, he's still praying for the rapist. And you... Who? Yep.
John Balliot. We've ended our affiliation with him. Everyone can fall into the darkness of sin, but there's hope. There's hope. And so we're encouraging everyone who listens to pray for John and his family. The children didn't even rate number three.
Over the next few weeks, we request you pray in earnest for John, his family, our team here at WCSG.
Jesus, the DJs get prayed for before the raped children do.
That God's people will not lose heart.
They didn't even make the list. Okay, so God's people will not lose heart, but it's okay if the little children lose virginity. Sorry.
Do please go on, Chris Lemke.
And most certainly, please pray for the victims related...
Oh, finally!
...in the allegations.
Oh, but they're only allegations. I mean, because you wouldn't want John Balliot to come back. You're going to call them out allegations, Chris Lemke, because John Balliot, who's accused, well, he might come back and sue you. The children can't even rise. The raped children cannot even rise above the guy who does afternoon drive traffic reports. Yeah. Oh, I'm just clearing that off my browser. It's so sick. It's so gross. I can't stand it. Tell you what, let's take our Moran Monday break, seeing as how it's 1 minute past the hour. Yes, indeedy. This is listener-supported conversation radio. We'll get the conversation part started in fairly short order. Jump right in. The number to dial, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. I don't think even tequila could fix that. Oh, my God.
We never had a clue. I mean, he was always praying and praising Jesus and telling little children he was going to pray to Jesus for them. And who could possibly have imagined?
Jump right in and jump right in if you want to, and I'm sure Tom would love to have your company. We got $115 to go for fundraising this evening. You can do all the math. PayPal button, traditional mail address. Your call. We'll be back. This is the Horn.
So we'll let it be. I couldn't stop it, so we'll let it be.
NCC. Good morning, Judge. This is the Horn, Moran Monday, off and running, about to chew through the damned hockey puck. We're going to have to find something better. Great group in the chat room. I told you they'd be along in a little bit. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Devin, HZ. Good evening, Jan, John, Kathy, Sentient, Stockton Larry, Texas T, Tim from L.A., Will from Chicago. Really good group in the room this evening. If you've never been there, I highly encourage you to jump in and participate. It's free and it's easy. And, yes, it's a full multimedia experience. By the way, just sort of alongside the story of John Baglio, which is also a story of his station general manager who had no idea that John Baglio was out there paying to have sex with little children, who nonetheless wants to pray for hope and forgiveness for John before anybody gets around to praying for the little rape children. Well. That was Michigan. It's just a few states down to Tennessee. The First Baptist Church of Bemis, Tennessee. Family had a little girl that was going to church there. They filed suit against the First Baptist Church of Bemis, Tennessee last month. They say that Chad Luttrell was a volunteer at Vacation Bible School 5 years ago. Turns out Chad Luttrell sexually abused the little girl. But according to the lawsuit, then Pastor Mark McSwain of the First Baptist Church of Bemis, Tennessee, also knew that Luttrell had a previous allegation or more of sexual misconduct. In the suit papers, it is claimed that Chad Luttrell had been seen at church kissing girls between the ages of 6 and 10 on the mouth, and three adult women said he had stalked, threatened, and harassed them. The grown-up women reported the misconduct to Pastor McSwain, and he reported their claims in 2006 to the Jackson Police Department. The cops asked Pastor Brother McSwain if the victims wanted to file a complaint, because why wouldn't you just ask the pastor instead of asking the victims? I mean, he's a pastor, right? He's a preacher. And the pastor said to him, "We're trying to follow biblical guidelines at this point, and I don't know what would be done." And then he went back in 2009 and said, "Ah, no, he kissed a little girl on the cheek, and those are false allegations that he was a stalking." And then he said, and I love this part, "Well, he only sent one inappropriate email to a woman." We may have to go back, or the editors, not we. I'm not part of. I'm not in the inner circle there. But may have to go. The editors might want to go back to the revamp the dictionary definition of pimp. So just to recount, the guy in Michigan went through a guy who was actually a child sex pimp. Really, you can go to a website and, oh my, of course, it's America, you know, capitalism, free market. Supply and demand, right? But at least the pastor at the First Baptist Church of Bemis wasn't getting paid. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Hello? One moment. Yeah, I always like to check when I do the hello and nobody's there. Hello?
I do the hello and nobody's there.
I hear me.
Hello?
Yes, hello?
Bob?
Yes.
Bob, you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, this is Jim.
Hey, Jim. You got me turned down?
Louisiana.
Do you have us turned down in the background?
It's all the way off.
Okay, great.
There was a Christian music festival that thing you were talking about happened?
Well, that's where, it's not necessarily where it happened. That's where he got busted.
I'm kind of confused. Christian music festival, isn't that an oxymoron?
You could make the argument at least in modern terms. I mean, your Bach, that's a lot of Christian music there too, but no.
Good point. That's true. Well, anyway, I hear that fortunately, it wasn't like the story you just, news item you just read. When I was about 21, I had a job at this investor insurance company. I got it, and the first day I'm there, this guy's going to show me the route. And the guy's name is Classic. It's just like I was taking out of a Faulkner or novel. The guy's name was Wright Goolsby. So he tells you, drive around, tells you, get the payments and talk with the customers, and then so he's dropping me off, and out of the blue he goes, Jim, what do you think happens when you die? I'm thinking, what a bizarre question to ask. He goes, I know it's basically a funeral insurance company, and I was a Buddhist back then. I said, well, I don't think going off on a Buddhist rant would be the best thing for my job. So I said, I guess maybe you have another life. And his eyes lit up, and he's like, born again? And I'm like,
okay, sure. Yeah, reincarnation, born again, why not?
And then, I've got a sister of all religions, right away they tell you how either good looking or how smart, or they're full of compliments when they think they got you. And he's like, well, here, I got something for you. So he gives me a little pocket-sized copy of the New Testament. And in it, he writes, it was in September, 1980. And then he's like, and then he writes, it had 2 days. When were you born? So I tell him, and then, and then he writes down that then they have a born again day. So he wrote that.
Nice.
That was my born again day. And like I said, I worked about 6 months, and it was just, I'd eat lunch with him sometimes, and he'd be in a restaurant. Sometimes he would, sometimes he wouldn't, but he'd pray before we ate. It was just a weird cast of
creepy
characters.
Creepy. Yeah. It can be really creepy.
Yeah. And then there was another woman who was kind of a sidekick, Miss Reese. Amazing, I remember the name. But as he was sitting in the office, it was Friday, we were kind of doing the books. And he's like, Jim, you want to sell more insurance? And I'm cooking up like 30 smart-ass remarks. And I just said, yeah. All you do is just give 10% of what you make to the Lord. I'm like, okay, I'll take that into consideration.
And would you be the Lord's representative on earth? Yeah. Do I give the 10% to you? Well, you could.
I'm sure it would be somehow affiliated with his church or their church. Yeah, and I remember he had a daughter who died, and some disease or something long before I was affiliated with the company. And I'm sure that tore him apart. And so maybe that caused a break with reality, or maybe he was already just set to do that. You know, I kind of think that's just the way things go. You know, I mean, some people react one way to a situation, other people react another. I mean, I doubt, given what I've read and learned as I've grown up, there's any way that could happen, but it could have happened, you know, where I could have fallen for that. I mean, I was a Buddhist for 5 or 6 years, and that was pretty cool at first, but then, right off the bat, the dogma part of this is the right one. All the other Buddhism is heresy, basically. I mean, I'm not joking. I'm serious.
It happens. Look, it's bad enough that we're in the Middle East at all, and we don't have the first flipping clue about the difference. I mean, what? Would you guess 90% of America doesn't know the difference between Sunni and Shia? Or even that there are different sects of Islam who hate each other.
Buddhists. Right. Well, even in Christianity, you talk to a Christian. I mean, this is a year or two ago when I was living in Vegas. There's like some guy whose dad was some sort of preacher, and what he's doing working in a casino, I don't know, but. He worked there for a while, a young whippersnapper, and then he kind of found out I was there. He's like, what do you think happens when you die? I said, nothing. No, something's got to happen. Okay, your body decomposes. Well, what happens to your spirit? Nothing. That's just the way I think, you know? And I think, like, my consciousness, you know, maybe on some level, I can't even, I think that's just the ego, that you have to go on forever, you know?
No, what it is an anthropocentric view of the universe, Jim. It is literally man at the center of the universe, or humans, sorry about the sexism there, humans at the center of the universe, which we clearly ain't. Okay, we're on a dusty little speck out in a backwater, on the wrong side of the tracks, part of a spiral arm galaxy that is absolutely right next door to nothing.
Right.
But if you have to ascribe to one of these worldviews where God is the center of all things and God's creation is the center of all things, well, they are wholly incompatible.
Well, I remember from the history of the Middle Ages, the trouble Galileo got for bringing forth the reality that the Earth is not the center of not only the galaxy, but not only the universe.
Yeah, heliocentric.
It's galaxy. Yeah. And it's just like I heard something a month or two ago about somebody saying, yeah, well, we are the center of the universe or something like that. I was just like, oh, really? So, I don't know. It's, I think it's my karma, my atheistic karma that brings those people to me. I gotta, you know. But I've gotten to where they know better than to even mess with me. You know. And, you know, all I do is I drop your name. Actually, you're not quite that well known yet, but
I'm working
on it. I say you should get by, you got a computer, check out Bob Kincaid. So.
Oh, bless your heart.
You know, that's just been, like I said, if you try to explain to them, it's like this way in every culture. But people are so culture centrist. I mean, you know, they act like Asia you know, it's just like the whole thing about, well, if you believe in Jesus, okay, you're going to heaven. So if that's true,
well, that's what makes it easy, okay? It has to be easy for the masses. And it doesn't matter what the faith tradition is. If you lit a candle and stared at your palms in front of the family gods in ancient Rome 2,500 years ago, you were okay. You had done what was required. But Jim, another member of the fraternity of Jim's here in the Horn Family Commune congregation, Jim just wrote in and said, hell, 90% of Americans don't know a great deal about religions in this country. And that's true.
Oh, yeah. That's something I wrote on the internet a while back, Facebook, the other one. But anyway, basically said, if you really believe what your religion teaches, that means like 97.2% of everybody else, 97.2% of the population is going to hell. Because basically, I mean, and this goes back to my Buddhist days. There were sects that basically practiced the same, did the same Nam-myoho-renge-kyo, second and 16th chapters of Lotus Sutra, but they did different silent prayers, and they just like different little things. They were considered heresy because it was almost like they were mocking or too close. They were close, but no cigar, but because you were close, no cigar, you're going to hell.
Consider this. There was a bit of a big deal over the weekend. The Presbyterian governing body, and most people don't even know what, you know, Presbyterians are Calvinism. Lutherans are, you know, the German Lutheran Protestant right. But the Presbyterian nationwide body agreed to further study the idea of divestment regarding Israel. And, oh, my God, hit the fan, of course. But I saw a Facebook post today from a friend of mine, the name of Reverend Jim Lewis down in Charleston. He's he's an Episcopal priest and a man of great conscience and tremendous moral authority who has tried to do the right thing all his life. And he was asking the question, why is it still taking the Episcopal Church so long to object to the myriad human rights abuses taking place in Israel? Why is it that it was okay for them to adopt divestment as a strategy in South Africa, but not in an apartheid state like Israel? And this is completely at odds with, say, the Southern Baptists the Reverend Hagee, starve down in Texas. Starvation is apparently for everybody but Pastor Hagee, who wants to force Jesus out of the clouds up there where he's hiding from Pastor Hagee by somehow supporting Israel as, you know, the grand whatever of the Middle East. And that's going to usher in the Antichrist and the tribulations, and then we'll all fly to glory in the clouds. But before we fly to glory in the clouds, we're probably going to have a religious war to determine whether or not we're going to fly to glory in the clouds naked or with our clothes on. And it's just the lot of it is insane. I mean, do you remember that survey, Jim, that came out a few years back that showed that without fail, atheists and agnostics know more about various religious tenets and beliefs than the believers in the actual sects do? Remember that?
Oh, yeah. I just know from my own personal experience, because I find it fascinating what bullshit they believe.
Well, careful, because somebody will... Right. And that's the thing. You can't talk about any of it without offending somebody. You know, whether it's Muslim flying horses or magic crackers or blowing out the candle of reincarnation by getting your sand picture right or twirling the bells enough times. It's all just sort of It's stuff to make things simple for simple people.
Yeah.
Because to actually study and live the life that most of these religions prescribe, they've all got oodles of rules, and if you're really, really in earnest about it, it's really difficult. And it is a life of constant self-evaluation. And along the way, you have to believe some impossible crap. So I prefer, philosophies that are far more existential in nature. I want to know more about this life on this earth, and let the next one take care of itself.
Yeah, the funny thing about that is they're all telling you the next life, particularly Christianity and maybe the Muslim religion. I mean, in Buddhism, in some aspects of it, there is a be here now vibe, I'll call it. And I haven't studied by any stretch of the
The be here now vibe is the existential vibe.
Yeah, it's Alan Watts and what's his name?
T.D. Suzuki or...
Well, maybe him, but there's also the guy who wrote the book Be Here Now in the late 60s, early 70s. He was a college prof and hung out with Tim Leary and got a lot of answers, but then he went more toward the Ram Dass.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So... that's how I come across that bit of knowledge.
There is the larger conversation about how it is that religion, and I'm not picking on anyone in particular because everybody's got a problem. They all do. I mean, they all do have a problem with people infiltrating their organizations and using the tenets of their doctrine and dogma to get close enough to have sex with children.
Oh,
There's a terrible, horrible problem within the ultra Orthodox Jewish communities. We know about what's going on in the Roman Catholic Church. It obviously happens in the Baptist Church. Witness this and all the other stories. And it has to do with the authoritarian structure. I have yet, and if there is one, somebody will send it to me. I have yet to run across a story of a Unitarian church with a child sexual abuse problem.
Yeah.
Because it's unauthoritarian. You can't hide behind the majesty of your position. You can't hide behind some sort of implicit ordination of some divine invisible friend.
I love that. Divine, invisible friend. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, like, if you go ahead and say, I have this invisible friend, and he does special tricks for me, if you don't define him as some sort of deity, you're considered kind of crazy.
Well, yeah.
Not if you give him a name.
Right, and once you have attributed the magic tricks to the magic invisible friend, then you can do things like, say, let's make sure and pray for John and pray for his forgiveness and pray for our DJs, especially the one on the midnight shift who occasionally backslides into sin and plays Led Zeppelin backwards and drinks martinis on the job. Let's pray for him. And if you're not too tired from all the praying, you can pray for the little rape victims, too. That's how you get there.
It's like today I was taking care of some business and my mother was driving me around and we made it a time, but I mean, it was like bizarre, and she's a hardcore Catholic, non-existent Scotch, bless her, but she actually was like, it was about, not praying, but I mean like five times mentioned like, God or something, I forgot exactly, some sort of God refrain of some sort, like, that really helped or something like that. You know, it's like there's God up and out of space, and he's waiting to hear somebody mention God different times or some religious kind of refrain, you know. I just let it slide. You know, I don't want to get to fight with my mother.
And 99 times out of 100, it's the better thing to do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, I did have one more thing to close with this. I hear about this one. Jesus walks into a hotel, puts three nails on the counter and says, can you put me up for the night?
Okay. So this isn't fair, but nonetheless, I was on my way down into the Coal River Valley, and I'm a bad person. Okay, let's understand that I'm a bad person. I'm going to hell. So there's a lot of twists and turns on this road, okay? And there's a lot of blind driveways, you know, blind in the sense that you can't see them and anything can be pulling out from them at any time. So I see this sign, slow church ahead. Now, it's obviously around the bend. And it says, and we come around, and they've got one of their, you know how they've all got a sign, they've all got signage out front with some stupid little saying on it?
Yeah.
Okay. So Ferg and I are traveling down into the Coal River Valley. We see this sign, slow church ahead. Come around the bend. I see their signage. It says, one cross plus three nails, forgiven. One cross plus three nails equals forgiven. I looked at Ferg and I said, well, I don't think that's slow at all. I think that's rather clever, don't you? Man, tough crowd, Jim.
I tell you, no, I was going to say slow church. That was definitely a slow church.
That was clever. One plus three equals forgiven. Huh, see what he did there?
Well, I'm going to let you go with somebody
right,
else.
You have a good evening, Jim. Good to talk to you.
Get your place in hell set up. Have a good one, Bob.
All right. Right over by the barbecue smoker. That's Jim, our buddy from Louisiana Stan. Thanks to Tim. Tim's forever trying to find stuff to sort of flesh out the details on things that get mentioned on the program. Who knew that Roland Coe is actually a definition in the Urban Dictionary? No, really. This from the Urban Dictionary, direct quote, reading the whole thing. Roland Coe. When stupid-ass white trash people turn the injection pump up on rickety-ass, broken-down, 12-volt Cummins 12, V12, not 12-volt. Damn it, the V's supposed to go in front. V12 Cummins-powered Dodges and subsequently install 5-inch smokestacks in the bed of said Dodge, then said WT decides to post YouTube videos of their truck blanketing neighborhoods with black diesel soot. Regardless of engine technology progressing to the point of nearly eliminating black smoke and producing nearly double the power of modded mechanically injected diesel engines in stock form, a coal rolling owner will respond with a not-so-clever response of, I'd rather be coming than stroking. Get it? One cross plus three nails equals forgiven. Referring to his belief that his Cummins engine is better than International's Power Stroke engine series found in Ford trucks, because Isuzu's Duramax engines found in GM-branded trucks cannot be directly correlated to any phallic self-gratification, they are typically ignored. This particular stereotype is the progression of the IROC Camaro owner in the 1990s and the lowered Civic hatchback owner in the early 2000s. They can be identified by their love of Nickelback, lack of personal hygiene, closeted homosexuality, and morbid obesity. A majority of these owners reside in Florida. This species also can be found in eastern Texas, Alabama, Georgia, and California's Central Valley. I would note that they have apparently also migrated into southern West Virginia. And here it is in usage. You know how you always have to use the term in a sentence to make it clear. Check her out, fellas. I was rolling coal through that there intersection antagonizing the queers. Y'all want to get naked and jump in a mud hole together? Who knew? Who knew? The things I learned. This program is always a learning experience for me. What else? Oh, I mentioned we've got, oh, yeah, by all means. David in South Carolina responding to it all. Get a Peterbilt. Peterbilt, how's yours? Oh, God. Robert in Australia. Bob, crucifixion is a really difficult way to commit suicide. You can never hammer in the last nail. Neil from the Young Ones. Stop it. Stop it. Just stop it. You're all awful. Yes, I know, and I'm only making it worse. I mentioned that we have a Savage Wiener sighting, which is probably cause for getting out the eye bleach, but never mind. Now, the Savage Wiener managed to dodge the Vietnam draft by claiming he was studying nutrition. Yeah. He claims to have a PhD in nutrition from the University of California, Berkeley. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But it's been a while since we've had a Savage Wiener clip. And I mentioned this before, the thing with being a right winger is that you always have to find something to try to one up the nastiness of your right wing colleagues and compatriots. I think I can say with pretty fair certainty that that really doesn't happen over here on the left. I've never heard Malloy try to one up Hartman. I've never known Stephanie Miller to try to one up Ed. And Lord knows I'm not in the one up in anybody business. Because we're just talking about things that interest us or outrage us or whatever in life. And it's not necessary to vilify entire ethnic groups of human beings. But if you're in the right wing, you gotta. I mean, if Rush Limbaugh is sliming females, well, that corner's taken, so you got to find somebody else to slime. So maybe you're Sean Hannity, and you'll go out and try to whip yourself up a homicidal frenzy among a bunch of mouth-breathing fundamentalists in Nevada. Okay, so Sean's got that corner. Limbaugh's got the misogyny. The Beckerhead is out there ripping off Alex Jones day in and day out. Oh, my God, Alex Jones has a dating site? No, really? Where like-minded info warriors find each other? Oh, hi, look, it's the Millers. Jared. Yeah. Well, I guess the Savage Wiener is just trying to settle somewhere that nobody else is working these days. So you get this.
I was stumbled upon the concept of our human ancestry, and we were talking about Neanderthals and why they died off. The theory is.
Oh dear God, I forgot. This is going to be a pseudo-anthropological blather. Dr. John, if you're out there, and I know you've been very, very busy, but really, if you either fast forward through the next 20 minutes of the program or whatever, or extra strong duct tape and just go somewhere nobody can hear you. This is not, oh dear.
The theory is that originally the Neanderthal and the humans, Homo sapiens, got along, and then the human knocked them off or something. And we have an expert on our show right now. Mark, welcome to the Savage Nation. I understand you're a Neanderthal expert.
Yeah, I really made my living in quantum physics, but...
This does not bode well. I understand you're a Neanderthal expert. Well... I mean, yeah, quantum physics, but you know, what the hell? I'll take a run at it.
I just, it was a natural thing for me to study the Neanderthal. Let me just tell you a few things right off the top. The Neanderthal ate 100% meat, and that made him very different than our ancestors.
So the Neanderthal was the meat eater.
Yeah, 100%. No vegetables, no vegetable matter.
It sounds like my relatives.
Well, it absolutely worked during the Ice Age because there were large hairy animals running around.
Sorry, this is a family show, please.
Okay, the Neanderthal was stronger and had a bigger brain than our ancestors. And
yes.
During the Ice Age, they could hunt better, and they had a steady supply of food. However, once the Ice Age began to go away,
Michael Savage is so desperate for ratings, he's out there working the Neanderthal corner. Wow.
Our ancestors could eat plant material, but all the large animals were becoming extinct. The Neanderthal just lost out.
Never mind the fact that the Human Genome Project has been out how long? We've known for how long that there are Neanderthal genes in the human genome, so they weren't really losing out. They were integrating. Well, we can't be a right-wing radio show and be talking about no integration now, can we?
So the Neanderthal that was eating pure meat, his food supply started to diminish, so he died out.
Right, because we could get along without meat every day, because we could eat plants, but they couldn't. And by the way, we never got along with them very well. They found a few colonies where they were interbreeding, but normally they either cannibalized each other or they had sex with each other, but they never really got along. They were really different.
If they're not getting along, why are they having sex? Oh, is this another one of those arguments that rape is natural? I'm so happy to do what I do. Because I don't have to. Now, granted, we are well on the way to an evening of non-responsive fundraising, but the Savage Wiener has tons of money, and he has to get behind the microphone and do this. Ouch.
In every way. That was very...
That's interesting.
Notice that Mark is an expert, but Mark doesn't have a last name.
So from the point of view of dentures...
What? Dentures? Cavemen with dentures? Flies with beaks? Okay, let's just see where it's going to go. Because you know this is not going to end well, right? Let's just go back a little bit. I want to know about the dentures.
Or they had sex with each other, but they never really got along. They were really different in every way. That was very...
That's interesting. So from the point of view of dentures... they did not have grinding teeth. The Neanderthal had strictly cutting.
No, well, from the standpoint of dentures, Savage Wiener, they didn't have dentures. That's what they had from the standpoint of dentures. No dentures. I think he's talking about dentition. But that's the trouble with these guys. You gotta fill in the blanks.
Or they had sex with each other, but they never really got along. They were really different in every way. That was very...
That's interesting. So from the point of view of dentures, they did not have grinding teeth. The Neanderthal had strictly cutting teeth. Is that it?
Well, no, you don't have to go that far, because look at...
Hey, Mark, it's okay. You can tell Michael the Savage Wiener that the Neanderthals didn't have dentures. Oh, my God!
Among Homo sapiens, the Eskimos, for example, eat all meat because there's no vegetables up there, and they do just fine. For example,
whoa! Don't tell that to the Inuits that they can't live on an all vegan diet. I mean, don't tell that to the hippies in San Francisco about the Inuits up there eating all meat. I mean, they're liable to get upset and tell you that their health is bad. The fact is that I studied this years.
Oh, that's where this is going to go. We're going to start sliming native Western hemispheric cultures now. You know it's on the way whenever you hear the savage. You know, years ago, I studied. That's a dangerous phrase, and I've been known to use it. Because the whole point of learning is to constantly be expanding the base of one's knowledge. And it's something you have to stay on top of deliberately. Now, Michael the Savage Wiener was doing his alleged graduate work on a doctorate in nutrition back during the Vietnam War, because he was doing it to dodge the draft. Like Dick Cheney. But we learn things. The process of learning means that it expands and it grows. And old theories don't always hold water. This is going to be really, really big with the skinheads, for instance. Dr. John sent me an article a couple of weeks back. The weirdos, the right-wingers, have all become hopelessly enamored of a new book out there that Well, let's just... let's see. It's a little complicated, but it's such a great example. The right wing are having an absolute straight-up hissy, it's more like a love fest, over a book by Nicholas Wade called A Troublesome Inheritance, Genes, Race, and Human History. And it's a sort of second decade of the 21st century argument for all kinds of shit that is just wrong. And has been wrong. And Nicholas Wade wrote the book, and he's a New York Times guy. And he wants to argue that we are entirely controlled, or not entirely, but largely controlled by genetics, and that nobody can do anything about their genetics. And, for instance, from the Jonathan Marks article in These Times, the thesis of this book is that although culture is important, genetic microevolution, subtle genetic changes in a population over time, best explains the course of human history, from how we first settled down in villages to the Industrial Revolution to the, quote, and this is a quote from the book, the adaptation of the Jews to capitalism, unquote. And since the author explains that he uses the term adaptation in the peculiarly narrow sense of a genetically based evolutionary response to circumstances, it's hard to make excuses for his choice of words. This is not about Jews adapting through the high rates of literacy and exclusion from land ownership, but about having the right package of innate genetic propensities. And Charles Murray, the shameless racist that we have discussed in the past on this program, is a big fan of this book. Here's the worst part. Nicholas Wade is the New York Times science writer of long standing. So this is the kind of trouble that you get into. If you're out there wandering around in this particular area, you'll run across people writing about Nicholas Wade's book, A Troublesome Inheritance. And without fail, the right wingers and the skinheads and the Nazis and to the extent that they read writing and then they are knowers of words, love this book because it gets them off the hook. Well, see. We're not racists. We just have an innate understanding of the genetic code. Oh, Jesus. So back to the Savage Wiener, who back in his day was studying the Inuit. He also studied peoples in Polynesia, apparently, because at one point he wrote a poem. Now, this guy is a notorious gay basher. But he wrote a postcard, apparently, to Allen Ginsberg, the notoriously gay beat poet with whom he had been friends, talking about how he would like to stick his camera up said poet Ginsberg's bottom and take photographs. Don't ask me. I didn't write the postcard. Back to the Savage Wiener.
So that they can't live on an all-vegan diet. I mean, don't tell that to the hippies in San Francisco about the Inuits up there eating all meat. I mean, they're liable to get upset and tell you that their health is bad.
What? The vegans no, I missed that. The vegans are up there protesting and doing sit-ins around Inuit villages, trying to convince them to live on a vegan diet. No, they're not? You mean the Savage Wiener just set up a straw man and knocked the tar out of him? Oh, okay.
The fact is that I studied this years ago when I was working for my PhD.
That would be decades ago, just saying.
PhD in nutrition, I was very pleased to learn that the Greenland Eskimos, who lived on huge amounts of whale blubber, suffered no heart disease whatsoever.
They probably didn't live long enough to get heart disease, but I'm just speculating.
Well, let me go a step further. The scientists went up there and really wanted to know about this, and they tried to march step for step with the Inuits, and they ended up not being able to do it. You have to consume a certain amount of blubber in order to generate enough heat to keep up with the Inuits. So they're really advanced, or let's say they're a good fit to their environment.
At least we're talking about natural selection, right? At least the Savage Wiener isn't saying that the Earth is 6,000 years old and Adam and Eve rode to church on the back of a dinosaur. Yeah? That's a good thing, right? We can feel good about that. Don't feel too good.
No, what I'm saying is the Greenland Eskimos, who lived on almost pure seal and whale blubber, meaning high-fat diets, did not suffer atherosclerosis, and the theory that I read was because the whales and the seals in those waters were consuming plankton, which the plankton was rich in omega-6 fatty acids, for example. And so the blubber itself was not cardiotoxic blubber, per se. So it's not the fact that you're eating fat, it's the kind of fat that you're eating, and whether or not your body can metabolize it without oxidizing it.
Okay, so now we're going to start talking about what bodies can and cannot do.
Yeah, but Dr. Savage, you got to go further than that. There's genetic selection.
I agree with that 100%. 100% correct. Of course there is.
You can drink alcohol and they can't. And that's genetic selection.
And that's 100, you know, that's an interesting, let's talk about that for a minute.
I love things that start with we can and they can't. So he's just made the age-old argument that one should never give alcohol to a Western Hemisphere native because they can't handle the fire water. Mm-hmm. Got it? Sure. Now this little particular libel has been handed down through the generations. Luckily, for people who pay attention, we know that that is bullshit. It's kind of like the hillbillies can't resist committing incest argument, to which we've been subjected here by, among other folks, the lawyers at Crowell Mooring in Washington, D.C., writing on behalf of the National Mining Association in regard to the birth defect study about the increase in birth defects in mountaintop removal communities. It's invalid because hillbillies can't resist having sex with their brothers and sisters. That, too, is bullshit because it's been studied and there are no higher rates of incest in Appalachia than the rates in any other part of the country. But it doesn't stop them from repeating the ancient libels, because the libels play to their confirmation biases and make them feel better about themselves. It's the whole "there but for the grace of God goes John Smith" thing. Well, at least I can drink booze. All right? The Wisconsin Department of Human Services, this in an article by David Edwards at Raw Story. The Wisconsin Department of Human Services noted, "Metabolism of alcohol among all people groups is related to prior drinking history and body weight, not race or ethnicity. Drinking patterns and problems among American Indians are influenced by the same factors as other people groups. These factors include genetics, age, social norms and laws, social involvement, economics, mental health, emotional pain or trauma, self-esteem, and environment. Substance abuse is not created by race." To which, of course, Nicholas Wade and Charles Murray would respond, "Bullshit! It's all in the genes, and therefore we are..." Look, that genetic stuff is a form of predeterminism on a par with Calvinism, which raises the whole philosophical debate of, well, you know, if it's all just forecast, why don't I just sit still and wait for shit to come to me and happen to me? And, well, that's how it works. Or else we're all just automatons who get up and think we're moving willfully and with self-actualization, but are actually just wandering through a predetermined maze that either our genes or some invisible friend out in the universe has set up in advance. Let's get back to the savage wiener. This won't take much longer.
Native Americans have a lot of trouble with alcohol consumption, and I studied this, and I try to understand why such wonderful warriors ancestrally...
Really? He values the Native American populations because they were wonderful warriors. Not wonderful engineers of a brilliant environment such that this half of the world, this hemisphere, was better, was more populated and better managed than the rest of the world from whence the savage wiener draws his genetics. Oh, no. They were wonderful warriors. They died gloriously, but they couldn't have a drink. Wonderful warriors. But I wondered, why couldn't it? And see, this is another one of those Nicholas Wade moments. The Nicholas Wade answer is, well, yeah, they couldn't tolerate the alcohol because they were genetically, even though it's been proven to be untrue. But those people cannot, and the savage wieners, cannot take into account histories of poverty, oppression, access to health care, education, decent housing, clean water, clean air. No, none of that really matters. Because the Neanderthals didn't have dentures.
could not drink alcohol. Now, this is also true for one division of the Scandinavian people. They're laughed at by the others, you know, nicely. The Finns can also, they also have trouble drinking, you know that. The Finnish people are genetically related in many ways to our Native Americans. Do you agree with that?
Oh, no.
I don't know that.
All right, well, that's a fact. And the reason that the Native American has difficulty with alcohol is because their sugar metabolism is different than ours. Their bodies were designed over thousands or hundreds of thousands of years of evolution.
Ding, 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 siren. Were designed? But wait.
All right, well, that's a fact. And the reason that the Native American has difficulty with alcohol is because their sugar metabolism is different than ours. Their bodies were designed over thousands or hundreds of thousands of years of evolution, if not hundreds of thousands, to consume sugar, meaning blood glucose, at a very slow rate. And that permitted them to go on long-distance hunts and long-distance runs and basically...
Do you understand what... No, that's a... Do you see... Do you, no, no. This is why America is so stupid. And this is just one example. This stuff is... I'm not a scientist. I'm not going to tell you I'm a scientist. I'm not going to tell you that I was studying among the Inuit while I was studying... While I was out there trying to have a cup of coffee in law. No! But because the right wing are authoritarianly inclined... And yes, that's a broad sweeping generalization, but it's also verifiable. If you tell somebody, believe me, I'm a doctor... They will. John Oliver had a brilliant takedown this weekend of Dr. Oz and his hustling of miracle magic diet pill potion powders. Maybe this is the point in time when we revisit the fact that you can hardly turn on right-wing radio without being hustled by Gold Now, baldness cures, erection producers, Swedish mattresses developed by Natris and by NASA, and bowling balls that will bounce off of them and be picked up in midair by a vacuum cleaner while you're listening to your Bose Wave radio. Because they are inclined to respond to pitches from authority. And that's how this shit proliferates. And after, I mean, you want to understand the depth of the dumb? He has just posited people who are unable to metabolize alcohol because they have a slower blood glucose uptake system, and therefore... But there's a problem. As is the case with almost all human cultures, as soon as we started making stuff, we discovered the miracle... I use the word loosely... of yeast! I don't care where you are on the planet, with the possible exception of above the Arctic Circle. And it's even going to happen then inside an artificially warmed environment. If you leave something with starches and sugars in it, don't matter what kind, out long enough, fermentation's going to happen. And some curious human is going to take a swig. And then they're going to have a vision. We call it being drunk. And then, hey, how'd that happen? Well, I drank it, and it was... take the people of the South American Pacific Coast. Take the peoples of Mesoamerica. I think in the Andean culture, it's chicha. And in the Mesoamerican culture, it's the drunk-making Oakley. Once they figured it out, they didn't stop making it. They made more. And you can... And just because Michael Savage is so goddamn dumb that he doesn't know about it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. The Spaniards changed the name of Oakley to Pulque. P-U-L-Q-U-E. And you can still, to this day, walk into a pulqueria in Mexico. Hell, I think they even serve it at a Mexican restaurant in San Diego now. I got curious one night. I want to try it really bad someday. I want to try it really bad. I hope to try it someday. There, that works a little better. It is the fermented syrup of the maguey. Maguey, I don't know. My Spanish, abysmal. In many ways, you get Oakley or pulque the same way that you get... It's the front end of the process that yields tequila. Oh, well, now suddenly it makes sense. Why is Bob talking about it? Among the Andean cultures, it's a corn-based product. And in both cases, the very best grades were reserved for the highest classes, but everybody could have some down to the very lowest. And in those two cultures, they were very rule-based, very rule-oriented, intensely codified societies. There were strict punishments for overconsumption. I do not know this to be fact, but I'll speculate that if you were found to be a public drunkard, you might just wind up making that long march up the pyramid. But this goober says it just didn't happen because, oh God! Finish up.
Consume very small amounts of blood sugar. That's what their body was genetically designed for. And when you flood that body with alcohol, which is a sugar, converts to sugar, what you do is you completely overwhelm their entire capacity to deal with that large amount of sugar, and they get drunk very fast, and they get sick very fast.
Yes, they do. I got to tell you something. Jews have some kind of genetic abnormal.
Oh, it's a gift that keeps on giving. Ah, let me tell you about the Jews. What is this, Cliven Bundy's nephew? And I'll tell you one or two things about the Negroes while we're at it. Damn, 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 damn. I couldn't make this stuff up if I wanted to. Because, see, it doesn't work. It doesn't work if you have to explain that the historic issue regarding liquor has something to do with abuse, has something to do with the deliberate depopulation of continents. Now, chicha and the drunk-making Oakley are not the same as liquor. Good observation, Steve, writing in. Do you think that Mark the Expert knows that the Savage Wiener is Jewish? They don't care. They're privileged. They'll tell you anyway. If James Earl Jones had been doing the interview of Cliven Bundy, Cliven Bundy would have looked him right in the eye and said, let me tell you something else about the Negro. So we're at 10 minutes past the hour, and I'm going to take a break, and we'll come back to your calls. Luda with a note. Fuck that guy. I ain't no drunk engine. And I'm not genetically predisposed to being one either. So in his frame of mind, Africans are genetically predisposed to fried chicken and watermelon. What a phallic piece of fecal matter. Yes, precisely, Luda. And you know, we can just genetics just explain why every now and then I get this powerful, powerful hankering for a sheep's belly stuffed with oatmeal and chopped up sheep lungs. Haggis. Yeah. Thanks very much to Asa. Asa jumped in alongside Tom. And we are now only $100 away from reaching our fundraising goal. And we've got about 49 minutes, 48 minutes and change to get there. If you want to jump in with Tom and Asa, it would be much appreciated. So we don't start the week in a hole. I hate doing this. But by the same token, I have to. So your kind consideration is much appreciated. This is Conversation Radio. I'm going to prove it in a little bit. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Whiskey River, take my mind. Whiskey River, don't run dry. You're all I got to give. Whiskey River, take my mind. Don't let a memory talk to me. Whiskey River, don't run dry. Whiskey River, made in my memory mine, the wetness of its soul. Feeling the amber current flowing from my mind, and the warm and empty heart you left so cold. Whiskey River, take my mind. River, don't run dry. You're all I got to hear.
Nelson, ain't nobody like him. National treasure. Whiskey River, and this is, well, I mean, it wouldn't be, I wouldn't have been running Michael the Savage Wiener if this hadn't been Moran Monday. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
You talking to me?
I'm talking to you, Bill. What's happening?
Oh, man, I've been sitting here listening, enjoying the hell out of Wiener, and what a sick son of a bitch.
But he's delightfully, he's delightfully stupid.
Well, I just got a place to go right off the bat, Bob. A thing I heard on the overnights tonight, a live broadcast from Sarajevo. And they were standing there where there had been a pair of shoes cemented into the ground. The place where Gavrilo Princip was standing when he did what, Bob?
Murder Archduke Franz Ferdinand.
Yep. Now, here's the starting point for how many million deaths.
Oh, it's the birthplace of the 20th century.
Exactly. You and I, that's why you and I are in such a complete, we saw like a couple of warmongers, but it's not warmongering. It's pointing out
warmongering is wanting war. I want to learn from our horrible, horrible mistakes so as not to do it again, which is why I'm distinctly disturbed by the fact that there are 300 mothers, sons, and daughters off to Iraq.
Yep.
As military advisors.
You know, I don't feel I'm giving enough real backstory on that stuff. Like any opinions, they're contrary to what. My computers are pretty old. I say instead of email, I send smoke signal. You know, it's old stuff. Or a klaxon horn, you know, to signal people. But that shook me to know that they commemorated they commemorated the shooter like he's a national hero. Well, tell that to the millions of people, men, women, children, anybody who got in the way, you know. It was even worse in World War II. We're talking about getting in the way. The massive bombing. Well, you know, the D-Day landings, there was so much bombing going on behind to shut down the resupply, you know, to try to shut the Germans off from reinforcing people. But unfortunately, there were a lot of civilians somewhere in the way of that hard work. And, you know, anyway, that's part of what I was wanting to talk to you about. I thought you'd I had never known they had a statue commemorating. Have you ever heard that?
No, never have. Doesn't surprise me, but I never had.
But it kind of shocked me. I said, come on now, it was a tragedy.
Although I learned about an entirely different statue today, Bill.
Hmm.
I never knew that there was a sculpture in Tübingen, Germany, it's a big stone sculpture crafted by a Peruvian artist of, it's sort of an abstract representation of a vagina. And lo and behold, naturally, an American student got himself stuck in it. It's like a 9-foot tall stone vagina sculpture, and an American student, male, of course,
yes,
had to get himself stuck trying to crawl into or out. Well, he crawled into, and then he got stuck trying to crawl out of the 9-foot tall stone vagina.
Well, if the rooster is something like a sick comic, Bob, when young American males have got themselves trapped in the same thing over and over again, which was no good for the woman or the situation where, you know, if she was involved, it didn't help her any either. But you can get entrapped in a bottle of whiskey, you can get entrapped in a bunch of good green cigarettes. Regular tobacco trapped me, Bob. It's killing me. But anyway, the second part of the call was a reference to this Detroit writer, Warren Esselman. When he did a novel called Ensel, which chronicled that car from the development to the failure. And then that I learned about Ford Motor with how Hank the Deuce, as they called the young one, had to battle it out with his grandfather, who was still hanging in. And grandfather had a thug named Harry Bennett. You ever hear him?
I do believe I have.
Yeah, Bennett was the guy that launched the attack on the UAW guys on the Miller Road overpass. Walter Ruther and his brother and a few others.
Yep.
He went out and hired the guys to do the job. But it's a great... Well, this guy's done so many great chronicles on Detroit, which it's basically a major city. You can track that city, and you can track almost every other major city in the country. But you know where the political combine that produced Harry Truman?
I am, yeah.
Take a guess. I mean, how the hell had that did as great a job as he did when his money supply and such came from the Pendergast family to get him rolling? And then, of course, the Kingfish, Huey Long. What's your opinion of him, Bob?
Oh, he is without a doubt one of the most fascinating political studies, character studies, one of the most fascinating studies in American politics. And the man was a genuine, real, left-leaning progressive. It's saying a lot when you say of Huey Long that he got behind FDR and then turned on FDR as being not liberal enough. It has been said, in fact, I don't know if it's true, but it has been said that Huey Long pushed or pulled from the left FDR into Social Security because Huey Long wanted a whole lot more than a simple old age pension. I mean, this guy was a bit of an autodidact, a musician, wrote a big hit song called Every Man a King that he used on the campaign trail. And he was serious about it. It wasn't just a man's home. And, of course, this is all couched within the sexist terms of the era. He wasn't just saying a man's home is his castle. He meant it. Among other things, because he was offended by the pernicious poverty he had observed in his home state of Louisiana that was entirely a product of deliberate economic acts by huge corporate, largely natural resources organizations, mainly oil companies and coal companies.
There's been an awful lot of that kind of corruption down in the oil in Louisiana, for instance, from what I've read and heard. Because there's another detective writer, James Lee Book. Are you familiar with him?
No, I don't think so.
Check him out. His daughter's an attorney and a writer herself, and she just published something within 6 months to a year, and it was pretty interesting. She had the same name that he put on his daughter and the detective's daughter in the book, Alifair, which I believe is a... Because his character, his detective character, this guy in Robichaux, who's from the Lafayette, Louisiana area, which, you know, geographically should tell you a lot there. You don't have cable right now, do you?
No.
I don't yet, but those fishermen from the alligator hunters that...
Oh, I have seen that, yeah. What, swamp people or something like that?
Yeah. Well, their use of the English language is so unusual. It's like the old mountain style of talking 100 years ago. Some professors have traced that to Elizabethan English. I don't know, is that true?
I think there is some truth to it because of the isolation of the language, because of the geographic isolation.
Yep. And then how did all those Scots-Irishmen, all those Scotsmen end up on the border territories, Bob?
we were sent here.
And you know why you were sent there?
Because the English didn't really feel like they well, because we were handy and we were very good at what they wanted us to do. We're border, you know, Joe Bajant uses the term borderers, and that's where we were sent. I love taking this one. When I drive to D.C., I take this off-the-beaten-path route up to D.C. that takes me through the Virginia countryside along the Allegheny Front, and there was a string of forts built in the late 1750s, early 1760s. And they all had names, and many of them, the sites are at least marked by a historic marker. The one I go by is Fort Dickinson, and it was built to help advance the dispossession of this region from the people who held the land and had successfully lived upon it.
Yeah.
And that's why, and that, Bill, is why there's a good bit of, if you believe in something like karma, or turnabout is fair play even. People come into this area, the central Appalachia, and they dispossess the people who had lived here for a very long time and settle it and begin living here. And then by the end of the 1800s, lo and behold, here comes a bunch of folks in silk suits to dispossess the people who had done the dispossessing. And that's going on to this day.
Yes, sir. Yeah, the money crowd, in Cleveland, we had a... the guys who owned the iron mills, I should know the family name because they have christened a lot of, at one of the big universities has several buildings named after the same family. And,
Carnegie's?
This guy,
Mellon's?
What?
Carnegie's? Mellon's?
No, it wasn't Carnegie or Mellon. It was a Cleveland.
Oh,
there's a boat park downtown, an oar boat that has the same last name. I should know it, but I'm getting funky in my old age with names anymore. The only big name I remember is my first wife, the sweet old Bill, she called me. I think that's what she meant. I don't know.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But, yeah, so be she was married to. I talked to her quite a bit to this day. We owned a house just blocks from where I live now. But yeah, this guy owned Mather. Mather was the name of the family. They owned a big iron mill, and iron was going over to steel in those days, you know?
Yeah.
You would know more about that than me. Maybe not your English major. How the development of iron developed into steel through, I guess that was Carnegie. I guess that was his invention that changed it. But the average folks were working here, and they wanted more money, so he closed down the iron mill, took his family on the world tour. You're familiar with that, of course, the 1870s, 1880s.
Sure.
The super rich of that day would take their families on a trip around the world.
In fact, that is how, and you know that Mark Twain is one of my heroes.
Yes, sir.
He got in. He was a brilliant writer, a magnificent thinker, and terrible with money, awful with money. You'd almost have thought he was a musician. That's a joke. I'm learning, Bill. I'm working. I'm trying here.
You're correct, man. You got that one down to a science, yes.
But he wrecked himself financially, and a man named Henry Huddleston Rogers, who was a business partner with a man named William Nelson Page. Henry Huddleston Rogers, and Henry Huddleston Rogers was also a chum of John D. Rockefeller. Because eventually, you're absolutely right, there was such a tiny, tiny number of them when you get right down to it, which is the ultimate goal of capitalism, is for everybody to have. Eventually, capitalism wants one person to have everything.
Well, we're getting close with the Koch brothers.
Right, and we've been there before. You would think but because we don't live long enough, we don't learn. But anyway, this little clique of which Henry Huddleston Rogers was a part, Henry Huddleston Rogers loved Mark Twain, just thought he was magnificent. And Twain was on the verge of bankruptcy, which would have destroyed Twain's reputation, which was considerable by that point in time. And Henry Huddleston Rogers said, listen here, Clemens, here's what I'll do for you. And he would have, he'd have Clemens out on his yacht and everything, and they'd go sailing. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pay off all your debts. You are going to be debt-free. You're not going to declare bankruptcy, but you are going to work your ass off. And so Twain engaged on these worldwide tours and speaking engagements that gave us some of the most profound observations of human nature in his later life. It was on these tours that he visited the various countries on the African continent for the first time. I think he also went to Australia. And it was in watching the treatment that people of color received at the hands of white people that he began to develop such a dark, late in life, worldview and personal philosophy. And it's out of things like this that he winds up writing pieces like The Damned Human Race. And then, of course, and this is where it gets interesting. Henry Huddleston Rogers was the man who did that. And he was, and as I mentioned, Henry Huddleston Rogers was a business partner of a man named William Nelson Page. And William Nelson Page's Gothic mansion stands about 2 miles from where I'm talking right now. And they both got obscenely wealthy on a little railroad, I think, that was called the Virginian, that they built to move coal out of this area because moving coal via the C&O Railroad had become prohibitively expensive because the C&O essentially had a monopoly.
Railroads ran the country, you're right.
So they built a little railroad under the C&O's nose. The C&O never knew about it and started running coal to Norfolk. And it became known as the richest little railroad in America. And the railroad ran right to William Nelson Page's door. And he wound up being head of the procurement board for the U.S. Navy or something during the First World War. And there was even a Navy ship that was christened the William Nelson Page. How's that? How's that for a bizarre interplay of history?
It's done. Didn't Samuel Clemens have something to do with Grant's memoirs? Paying him to do that?
Oh, he didn't have something to do with it. He had everything to do with it. Mark Twain, Sam Clemens, thought that Grant was the greatest hero that the American Republic had ever had. And so Twain was serious about it. And so he was done with his presidency, dying of cancer, and Mark Twain, Sam Clemens went out and by subscriptions sold enough copies in advance of Grant's autobiography to make sure that his family was taken care of after he, Grant, expired.
You know, we come back to the saying, Bob, it's all about the money. That was something that jumped up and was biting you in about 75. You heard it a lot from people.
Well,
follow the money.
Yeah, chercher l'argent in French, but it's not just about the money. I mean, that's okay, but it is not about the money. It is about who wants the money and how much of it they want. And that's why we evolved the statement here at the Horn, they want it all. That is the essence of capitalism. It is the essence of the predatory market structure that exists and passes as an economy in this country. Like I said, you would think we would know better by now, having been through it a couple of times before. Twain named the Gilded Age the Gilded Age, and he did not mean it in a nice way. That goes away. We get a little interregnum of progressivism, which in itself was a Republican response to try to quell the urges of socialism.
Yep.
And even the progressive era passes away, and the next thing you know, you've got Warren Gamaliel Harding lowering the tax rates on the rich, contributing to the bubble, and buying on margin that leads to the roaring 20s, and you know where the roaring 20s got us.
Into the Great Depression, yes. Because I try to tell people now that this isn't the first time the country has economically taken the beating that it's taken now.
No, that's why every time Limbaugh hollers with talent on loan from God, a buddy of mine screams, margin call!
Yep. Well, that guy is... I mean, I used to listen to the guy occasionally. And he plays stuff like Clarence Frogman Henry, I Ain't Got No Home. He was a failed disc jockey, and I think he was a public relations man for the Kansas City Athletics.
I think it's further up.
Kansas City baseball team is now.
Yeah, they were the Royals by then. I always say he sold hot dogs.
Yeah,
he sold hot dogs to the Royals.
Yeah, because that's when he was just PR man or something. And he has a grandfather or a father who was a shock in Republican politics, if I'm not mistaken.
They were. His father was a judge, and his grandfather was some sort of a power broker.
Jesus. It's really sick. But anyway, I just when I heard the story about Plaster casting this guy's shoes and where he stood to pair that shot, I said, my God, how nuts are we? I've been to all the Civil War fields, but those monuments there are... This is because of what people did. Not the reasons they did it, but the immense amount of crazy courage that, they say one of my favorite science fiction things is about the guys that came by and gave the Kalashnikovs to Robert E. Lee. And the problem was, there was no way in the world they could make bullets for it.
Right.
So when they ran out of the ammunition they got from Russia. they didn't describe them as Russians. They were guys wearing badly cut business suits, was the way they were described in the book. And basically, it was Russians, you know. But I thought you'd been being a person. You and I share this thing about World War One that is, I think it's a lot bigger than most people in this country know about or understand. You see, in World War One, the most people, and they think of Sergeant Alvin York, who, damn, man, that guy was good at what he did. There's no doubt about that. That's about all they know about it. I picked up a book in the fifth grade and started reading, and we were at rest 5 miles behind the front, and they're arguing with the cook about how much beans he had cooked for me. And I finally kept reading, and I said, wait a minute, these guys are Germans. But All Quiet in the Western Front was a masterful work of anti-war religion. So it changed me around from a guy who thought that maybe going to West Point would be an honor to a guy who decided that let somebody else fight, you know. What was the old joke? Stirring up a fight between two drunks in a bar by agitating them both, and well, why don't you let you and him fight, you know? That kind of behavior. Anyway, I'll let you go. I hope you get these phones back because, again, that story about Detroit and the man, the automobile business and the collusion and the craziness. I'll leave you with one thing. You know about the Baker Electric.
Go ahead.
Right? No, that was a car that was right. There was one running around when I was a kid. I saw it when I was a teenager. I could still see this old lady driving this electric-powered car. They were a little funny-looking, almost square little thing. And, they ran that electric. And damn it, the one guy that worked for Chrysler, and we were talking about that, he developed this turbine that could run on a lot of things besides gasoline. But it never made an appearance. Because I think the people that are selling the crap out of the ground, and you see it with coal, unfortunately, you see, it was called. Well, as long as there's anybody they can throw a shovel full of that crap at and make money, they'll do it.
Yep.
And that's the thing is, we live in such a scientific area of life that we should be moving ahead. Unfortunately, I'll never see it. But that's the way it goes. God knows, Bob, I saw enough. I'm not complaining. Plenty of good times, you know, in those years. And plenty of bad ones. And plenty of ability to pick between friends, you know. Anyway, you hang in there.
All right. Thanks, Bill. You have a good evening.
Good night.
Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. It is 19 minutes before the hour. I want to thank Michael very kindly for jumping into the fundraising fray this evening. We are now only $80 away from meeting our evening's goal and staying out of the early week hole as we run downhill toward the end of June. Eight folks at 10, two at 40, one at 80, makes no difference. However it happens, as long as it happens, that's what becomes critical. So hopefully we will not finish the evening in a hole that we'll have to spend night after night trying to climb out of. PayPal button or traditional mail address. Either way is fine. I kind of hate to even mention this story because I don't like dragging him into Moran Monday, but yeah. Well, let's hold on. Somebody's on the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
It's Devin.
Oh, what's happening, Devin?
Not much. Is this phone working?
Mine is. Yours seems to be.
Okay. No, I just wanted to remind folks that 70 years ago today, there was a massive tornado outbreak in our area, and there was tornadoes up to F4 level.
Yeah, Shinston, West Virginia.
Yeah. Shinston and Oakland, Maryland, Thomas, various places in Pennsylvania, and even Delaware. Pretty much wiped Shinston off the map. Didn't come through where I am. I just thought that it should probably be marked, you know.
Yeah. And, of course, that's 70 years ago. And
yeah.
And when we talk about weather, you know, weather can have its extremes. I saw the historic low for a day, two or three days ago, in this area had been something like 36 degrees in late June, the low. You can have extremes, but it's when they start stacking up that you have to worry.
Exactly.
And they're stacking up now.
Without a doubt. There's a few other things going on. Coal's share of the energy market is highest level since 1970.
And the Energy Information Administration says it's going to go higher and higher and higher.
Until it hits a wall.
Or until there's nobody left to buy coal.
Yeah.
But by that time, there won't be anybody. By that time, there won't be anybody left to mine it either, because we won't be a successful human species anymore. We'll be an extinct species.
Absolutely. But it must be what they want. I mean, it's
no. They want the money, and the money is more important than even. I mean, this is how twisted they are, Devin. They want the money, and the money is more important than their own existence because they think somehow or another there's a planet B or their wealth will save them or they'll build a Logan's Run bubble city and we won't get to be in it. unless there's a few of us who are brought in to be serfs and serve them.
Yeah. They'll live under the dome, and you know, they'll bring in a few servants, but you know, they'll all have heart plugs or something.
Yeah. A la the Harkonnens, sure.
Yeah. Or, you know, you have to, milk a cat to get the antidote or something.
Oh, I wish, that's not as funny as it, no.
Well, that's how it works. I mean, I don't know. It's one of those days, you know?
Yeah, I guess. I guess indeed. Well, I tell you what. We'll talk soon. I've got another line ringing in here, and I can only do one at a time. So
okay.
We'll save some for tomorrow. Thanks for reminding me about Shinston. Take care, Devin.
All right.
Bye. Bye. I think we have an old married lady on the phone. Have I got an old married lady on the phone?
Yes, you do.
Hey, Tracy.
Hi.
That was a lovely wedding. I watched it and I was just proud to be a part of it. I think that was the funnest wedding I've ever seen. And that includes me and Agnes getting watched through a 30-06 scope and me watching her do the bee dance when the bee went down her dress. Which is what I immediately thought of when your priest said a new family has been cremated in this community.
Did you just say cremated?
Yeah, you tell him we heard it.
No, he knows. But isn't my pastor amazing?
Oh, he was. He was wonderful.
I mean, it's being at that church is just, I mean, the people at my church just took over and did at the church, at the reception, everything. And I want to thank everybody who watched it. You guys are my family too. And I'm just so glad that technology was able to have you guys be there with me. It was just, because, hell, you guys got to see more of the way than I did.
I just sat here with a big old grin on my face.
Are you grinning, Bob?
Everybody was having a wonderful, wonderful time. And you know what? I have to drop a note to our buddy Peter Godbold, because he will be so thrilled when he hears how the priest did the minister. What are we calling him? Is he just minister, priest?
Pastor.
When he did the declaration and said, by the power vested in me by the Metropolitan Community Churches and by the power vested in me by the state of California, and there was some polite applause, and then he got this that big old grin on his face and said, and by the power vested in me by the federal government, I now declare you married. And the whole room just erupted, and right on. But I tell you what, I'm forever giving notes. So pass this along to him. The next time he does one of these, the way he does that, when he does that by the power vested in me by the federal government part, no. Tell him it needs to be the power vested in me by we the people of the United States trying to form a more perfect union.
Perfect. Oh, I will tell him that. I will absolutely positively suggest that to him. Oh my God, that was amazing! And you know what? We had some. I didn't go to church yesterday for obvious reasons because I was exhausted.
Slacker.
I know, but I watched on the computer because we got that kind of technology. Him and his partner and him are getting married. They announced their engagement and they're adopting.
Oh. He is gonna be one Jim Dandy Daddy.
Isn't he amazing? I cannot wait. I cannot. Like I said, Bob, I have you know, we both have our, you know, our issues with the church. You grew up in a church, as did I. And hearing what we used to hear from the, what we're used to hearing from the pulpit, and knowing that is not so. But the first time in my life, I'm at a church where I feel Jesus. I feel loved and accepted. And
well, there was something beautiful there. I mean, there was even acknowledgement for the non-believers, because he said, you know, he mentioned that, and he said, or the universe.
Right. We got it all in, Bob. We got it all in.
I think.
How did you like her? Did you like the Mazel Tov? I mean,
the Mazel Tov was lovely. The well, okay, Jan jumped the broom. Somebody else I know stepped ever so gingerly over it because she does not jump in heels.
Exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely. I tell you, it was just, you know, of course I was crying before you, but I was fine until they opened the doors and I saw her. And then you saw me hug an older gentleman.
Uh-huh.
That was Jan's brother. We didn't even know he was going to be there.
Oh, I saw him, and that was your sister-in-law sitting next to him.
Yes. So we had no clue that he was going to be there. Him and my sister, Rachel was my maid of honor.
Okay.
So that she was a tall, gorgeous, dark-skinned girl.
Yes, I saw her.
Isn't she a vision?
Oh, you had a couple of visions there.
I mean, and my son. Isn't he a
Oh, you know, your son's just awesome. Alex is just straight up awesome.
And I heard there was some high fiving.
There was. There were a couple of moments when interior church decorum took a whipping. And of course, I haven't seen the happy couple actually dance down the aisle on the way out of the church in a while.
How cool was that?
The whole thing was cool. By the way, for anybody who's feels like they're being left out in the cold here, we're talking about Tracy and Jan's wedding, which took place Saturday evening, and a lot of us watched it online.
And that's another thing. I mean, my church. I go to a church where everybody is welcome, regardless of what your beliefs are. If you're Catholic, if you're Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, it doesn't matter. All that matters is that you are in a place of worship and prayer and relief. And, I mean, I'm telling you, when you saw my pastor and Reverend Barbara with herself, she almost tried to do a sermon when she read the scripture, and then my son doing the poem. Man, I don't know how anybody, there wasn't a dry eye in that.
Oh, no, there wasn't. There wasn't.
There wasn't. And I heard, like I said, you guys.
Well, I got to throw this in there. The children. Because anytime you're putting together a wedding, children are always the jokers in the deck. Because you don't know if they're going to behave or not behave or go just wild. And even the little tiny fella with the beautiful red ringlets was perfect. The young people were just wonderful and beautiful, and everything happened right.
We don't play. And Roger, he's the heavy set guy that you probably saw running around. He was my coordinator. Never plan a wedding without a gay man, ever. If you want a wedding to go right, do not plan a wedding without a gay man.
Oh, see, no, that's old. I mean, everybody knows that. Even when the Southern Baptists have a wedding down in Alabama, Stan, there is a gay man doing some work there somewhere. They just don't acknowledge it. Instead, and you can check in with Peter Godbold on this, they say things like, well, he's just very sensitive. He's sensitive. We're not going to be mean about it. He is very sensitive, and he is a confirmed bachelor.
Oh, the
concerned.
Hell, them Southern Baptists couldn't even make the rainbow sherbet and ginger ale Baptist wedding reception punch without a gay man. What are you talking about?
Now, I'm sorry to say we did not have the rainbow sherbet, but we had champagne and ginger ale punch with a ginger ale ice ring.
Very nice. Very nice.
And I can't wait to see you guys to see the pictures of the wedding cake. It was shaped as a taxi.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
And Jed and I were sitting Jed and I's faces, so we're sitting in the back waving where Alex driving.
That's perfect. That's just perfect. Unfortunately, Tracy, we've run out of time. I gotta go, but I want to hear more about it. And you're going to be posting pictures on. You've already been posting pictures on your Facebook page.
Have you seen the pictures? Have you guys seen the pictures?
I've seen a couple of them.
Yeah, go back on because my photographer is posting more and more pictures. And I'll post them on, you know, on the Horn page. But again, I just really want to thank you guys. I love my Horn family, and I am so blessed and honored that you guys took the time to watch me and my girl get married. We are just, I cannot even explain it to you.
Well, I think I speak for the whole Horn Family Commune congregation when I say that our fondest wish is that you both be happy for a very, very, very long time.
And I plan on it. I might have to slap her around a little bit, but, you know.
You're being awful again, Tracy.
I can't help it. We're
proud for you, and congratulations, and to Jan. And tell everybody that we were just tickled pink to be able to watch. And hopefully we will talk soon. Bye now.
Yes, we will. Yes, we will. Bye-bye.
Tracy, the lady cab driver, recently married as of Saturday, and it was a beautiful ceremony. We got to get out of here. Before we go, though, I want to thank Glenn. Thank you, Glenn, very much. Glenn just took the fundraising goal down to $70. Thank you, Glenn. And that means we will start tomorrow evening at $220. Maybe, and hopefully we'll be able to deal with that. Thank you, one and all. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox, to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT, ACHECT.org. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Dr. Bill is back tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Horn.